sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out. Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You are listening to Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate Company and the team leader for Becky Ivins' team. What we do every day in our office and out of our office mostly, because we come see your homes. We help figure out whether it's time to sell or not. It's hard to determine whether or not to sell your home unless you know the value of your home and what you would have to do to get your home ready to sell. Met with some good folks last night. Actually, the daughter of a good friend of mine, a good realtor friend of mine, who has retired and moved on. And I'm getting more and more of those calls saying, could you help my family member? And the deal is they just want the truth. And these realtors have worked with me for years. They know they're going to get the truth, and they're going to get it directly. I'm not going to walk around the issue. The first thing I do when I look at this, I look at the court records and decide, well, who owns the property? Because the people calling me are often not the owners of the property. And you might think that peculiar, but it happens all the time. So I brought in my friend and my personal attorney, Mr. Ron Shalott.
Good morning, Becky.
Good morning, Ron. You haven't been on for a while.
It has been a while,
hasn't it? It has, and we're going to have you on more often. I know. Here we are, well more than a third of the way through the year.
Well, you've had some great guests on the last few weeks.
We have had some good guests on, and some new guests and some old friends that we've had. Mr. Robbins on for several times because our weather will not settle down. And Larry Robbins with Robbins Roofing, by the way, I'm going to give you his number four times today, because with all the storms and the rain, I want you to call and just say, would you please just come check my roof? And he can tell you whether or not you're in the path of destruction. But sometimes your roof just kind of gets blown up a little bit by the wind. It doesn't have to be the hail. So 728-3700. I'm going to give it to you again in a little while. You really should have that number, a couple of numbers, written by your telephone, so that those of you who still have landlines, and if you don't, where your charger is. Robbins Roofing, 728-3700. And the other one is a water and fire restoration, because water and fire restoration, when you get it, an incident, it's kind of too late to start looking at up numbers. You need to know exactly who to call. So you call my friend Tim Fain. He is with Exceptional Carpet Cleaning, but he does so much more than cleaning carpets. He has the right methods. Your insurance will pay the claim if there's a water issue, just the same as they would pay a national company. And it's, of course, 405-326-5487. Any of my favorite people, you can go to BeckyIvins.com and look at the tab that says Becky's Favorites, and you can get those phone numbers and email addresses and websites. So, Ron Shalott, when I look at the ownership of property, I often find that it's not owned by an individual, it's owned by a trust.
Well, when you contract as a realtor to represent somebody, you certainly want to find out before you contract with that individual and represent them to sell property, to find out if they indeed own the property or if they have the right to contract for the sale of that property. We look at the title and the county records. Oklahoma County is pretty easy. It's online. Not every county is that simple, but a lot of them are fairly good on it. But at times, you don't just want to look at the first page on the county assessor's site. Sometimes you want to even delve a little bit deeper just to make sure that you've got everything covered on that, because it's very important that when you're representing someone to sell a house and you're showing the house to a potential buyer, you want to be confident that the person you're representing can indeed sell that property and transfer good and marketable title to that property.
You know, we've had agents in our office who have written contracts, written offers, and they became contracts because they buyer and seller both signed them, or at least who we thought was the seller. And the realtor thought it was the seller, but never checked the court records. And it was a relative of, or I will tell you, one of them was the daughter of the owner of the property, was doing all of the communicating and actually signing.
I have run into that with certain realtors, not with Becky Ivins and her team, because over the years we have discussed this, and Becky and her team does very good at checking that. But I've seen other realtors who have not been so careful and have not checked to make sure. It's an extra step. It takes a little bit of time, and it takes a little bit of know-how to do it. But if nothing else, then contact someone to do it for you. If you're a realtor, contact an attorney. Contact me, and you know, I can look it up for you and tell you, you know, what the property records say. Sometimes there is a discrepancy as to an individual owning it versus a trust owning it, for example. And then you have to look to see who is the proper person to contract for that trust. It might be the same person that you would expect to be the owner, and it's the name on the trust, but sometimes it's not. And you have to be very careful on that, especially when you're dealing then with elderly people who may lack capacity, or if you're dealing with a situation where an individual has passed away and they haven't cured the title, haven't made the title into a marketable title that can be sold. And that's what we're talking about, marketable, that can be sold properly and clear and marketable title transferred. And the last thing you want to do is get to a closing after all of this and a title attorney renders an opinion and says, oh, by the way, someone else owns this property. That's very embarrassing, and it can be very expensive, and it can destroy the deal.
Right, and more than once, I will tell you, several times, we have had the girlfriend or the boyfriend, significant other of the owner call and want to sell the property. And then I'll look at the court records. I mean, I do that when I'm on the phone. I'll just look it up real quick and go, now, you said your name was Diane what? Okay, well, sometimes it's like Pamela Diane something, and someone in title, it may be the right person because maybe she took title as Pamela D. Smith, and she married Mr. Rogers, and now she is Pamela D. Rogers, and she calls and she says, this is Pam Rogers, or this is Diane Rogers. And it's not anything like the name on the court records, but it truly is the right person. But if you're a significant other, more times than not, when I ask who that is, they person on the other end of the line says, oh, well, we just might as well be married. It's common law, right?
And that gets into another issue. I know we've talked about this on a show a couple years ago.
Well, and we're going to discuss it at length.
Yeah, unmarried cohabitants.
Okay. And that unmarried cohabitants and the relationships there is a subject that we need to delve into, and we're going to do that right after this break with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You are listening to Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate, license number 47388. If you got storm damage, rain damage, you happen to have rain inside rather than outside, I want you to call my friend Larry Robbins at Robbins Roofing. That number is 728-3700. If you have a water event and need it extracted from your house, call my friend Tim Fain. And Tim Fain, the name of the company is Exceptional Carpet Cleaning. He does full water restoration and fire restoration. And that number is 326-5487. And Ron Shalott, my guest today, we are talking about taking title, significant others. How is the title of the property? Can the significant other do anything with the title of the property because of common law? Common law marriage, right?
Well, you get into some complex situations due to the different types of relationships that you have. Ideally, and we've seen this before I get into it, we see this with people who, especially younger people these days, who delay marriage, but they want to live together. Sometimes it's out of necessity because they need someone to help with the expenses. Sometimes because of an amorous relationship. We then have situations where a house is purchased. Who owns that house? Who's on the note? Who's on the mortgage? Who's on the title? And that can become critical if there ever is a situation where there's a split. And with a lack of a marriage, you have a better propensity for a split up than if you have a marriage, which people try to work through. Or you can have things such as a disability where one of the individuals or the individuals on the title becomes incapacitated. Then what does the significant other do? And is there a common law marriage? And if you have a situation where two individuals are cohabitating, and they're cohabitating because they don't want to get married, and they're going to be filing individual tax returns as single, they're going to have on their social media sites, I'm in a relationship, but I'm single. You have all those pieces of evidence that shows that they're single. That's going to be very difficult to say that there is a common law marriage, because a common law marriage has to be established by incidences of marriage that the couple holds themselves out as a married couple. So we do have an evidence problem.
So is there common law marriage in Oklahoma?
There still is common law marriage in Oklahoma. It's become a bit more confused now with the same-sex marriage, because used to be we just worried about, well, if there's a guy and a girl, now gender has no basis in it. So technically you can still go that way, and you have that possibility, in which case, if you have that, even though the individual is not on the title, they still may have some claim of a homestead interest. And that can cause a lot of issues if one of them goes to sell it at the future time and the other doesn't want to sign any kind of sales contract. You can run into some complex situations.
So there is common law marriage.
You still have that. And when you have a cohabitation, when I've talked to people about that, I've said, treat it like it's going to be a marriage. Have a contract. That sounds not very...
Marriage is a contract.
Marriage is a contract.
It's more than a contract.
Yes, but it doesn't sound very amorous to get a contract from an attorney. But you want to have some kind of written agreement, a memorandum of understanding, something that says, this is mine, this is yours. And who has the rights to something? Because you can have a situation where I might be on the title to the property and the note might be in my name and the mortgage is in my name, which is why I'm the only one on the title, but my significant other may be the person who's paying the mortgage and who's paid, you know, thousands of dollars.
We run into that all the time when there's a split up, and it turns out that most of the time one party has the down payment and the other party has the ability to make the payments, the monthly payments. And then when there's a split, particularly in a same-sex thing where are they married? Are they not married? What do you do with something like that? And legally, it's my understanding, there's not a whole lot you can do if there's not a marriage.
Well, actually, if there's not a marriage, but you have put money into this situation, you can make a claim against the other. You can make a claim on the property, and you can at least tie up any kind of immediate resolution. Actually, I'm involved in a lawsuit with this very issue of significant others who split up. It can be a situation where you claim a breach of your agreement, a breach of a contract, even a fraud or an unjust enrichment. So there are some ways from a lawyer perspective you can look at it and try to enforce the terms, even though there's not a written agreement. And that's why I suggest a written agreement. Have something in writing. That way, when the split up happens, you do have something to show what we intended when we went into this. And if you have the disability, that's even worse, because if you have someone who's incapacitated, then who does have the control at that particular point?
Well, we'll return right after this with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You're listening to Becky Ivins. Contact me at 722-3232. We can help you figure out, I mean, last night, help some folks figure out, are you going to sell, are you not, and how much you're really going to get for your house. I hate it when I follow a realtor that has had the property listed that wasn't honest with their client, and the client seems to think their property is worth $50,000 more than it's worth. And, you know, by the time they get around 6 months on the market, 9 months on the market, with one or two other realtors, they're ready to hear the truth. But if I come out the first time, I promise I'm going to tell you the truth, what your house is worth, what it's going to take to sell it. It is time for our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing. Robbins Roofing's word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing to give you a fair and honest assessment on your roof and things about the roof that could cause your house to be not waterproof. Your house needs to be warm, safe, and dry. Robbins Roofing can help you with that. 728-3700. Keep that phone number close by. It is 728-3700. Our word today is durable. Durable, Ron.
Such as in durable power of attorney.
Such as in.
Well, you talk about that a lot in our presentations that we give together, and it's a very important instrument to have, a durable power of attorney. And, of course, the question comes up, so what does durable mean, and what does it matter on a power of attorney? Because people usually know what power of attorney is. They just don't know what is this durable power of attorney.
Well, and there's a couple different types, at least, of durable power of attorney, right?
Well, there are aspects to it that you can have.
But what does the word durable mean?
It actually comes from the French, durable, which is spelled the same way as our word durable. And the French word means lasting or enduring or solid. I mean, you think of clothes that are durable, or an item that's durable, that lasts, that's solid, that's enduring. And for a power of attorney, the concept is that, unlike normal powers of attorney that are held into a suspense if the person who creates them becomes incapacitated, incapable of acting, a durable power of attorney has a feature in it that it lasts despite the person who created it being incapacitated. In fact, for most durable powers of attorney, that's the whole idea, is that if I become incapable, incapacitated, that I have appointed somebody to take over for me. Now, you're talking about aspects, and the aspects could be for my health care decisions, medical procedures, access to my health care records, deciding what kind of medical treatment, those types of issues. Or it could be financial. It could be my business affairs, and business could be balancing my monthly checkbook or paying my taxes or paying my insurance or handling my light bill to make sure the power's not cut off. If I'm incapacitated and can't do those things, the durable power of attorney allows me to have pre-selected somebody and appoint them to take over in my place and in my stead, and that doctors and others can rely upon that person, to act as if it was me. So that's very important that we have that lasting, enduring power of attorney in the event of incapacity.
When does a power of attorney end? Can you revoke it?
You can revoke a durable power of attorney. You can just flat out revoke it and terminate it. You can replace it with a different one. That's another way. Death terminates a durable power of attorney, because if you're deceased, you're no longer alive, so you have no power to grant. It's now with your estate. Consequently, the durable power of attorney then terminates at death. And I know you've had this experience where people will come in with someone has passed away, and they go, well, I want to sell the property. I have the durable power of attorney. But yet the durable power of attorney is worthless because the person has passed away.
The principle that they have power over has no power. Therefore, the person with the durable power of attorney no longer has that power.
The agent.
Okay.
Or we can call them an attorney, in fact, is the technical term for it. Just attorney there just means representative. Has no power because there's no principle to bestow the power upon them.
Right.
So you have that situation. And when we're talking about unmarried couples cohabitating, that's a very real issue that can crop up if your significant other that you're with and have been with for a while becomes incapacitated. You have no legal right to their health care decisions, their financial decisions, without some type of ability through the legal process, which is either a durable power of attorney, or you can apply for a court guardianship, which costs several thousands of dollars and involves a lot of labor and a lot of reporting and accounting. So for those who are unmarried, it certainly is an issue, but it's even an issue for those who are married. If you go to a medical doctor, they're going to say, well, who can access your medical records? Who can we talk to? And consequently, if you have a durable power of attorney, you already have that pre-selected, especially if it's a traumatic incident or an adverse situation where you're not capable of giving consent at that point. So power of attorney is important.
And speaking of age and being able to access medical records, that was an eye-opener for me when my kids were 18 years old, and both my oldest ones, when they were 18, and I had some very important, we had an important medical event with both of our two first ones, and they were 18 years old. I could not walk in as their parent, even though they'd be in high school, and get their medical records without their consent. Is it still like that?
Is like that. The health care information under the HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, prevents disclosure of private health information. Consequently, health care providers correctly are not just going to give out health information about anybody without their consent. And if they're an adult, consequently, they must give consent for that, which is why when you go to the doctor's office, you have to sign some of these forms about consent. And if you have the durable power of attorney already in place, then consequently that individual can access that if the power of attorney is in effect. I mean, there's a couple ways they can go into effect. One way is incapacity, which is called a springing, that goes into effect only if you're incapacitated. But there's another one, which is an immediate one, where the person can access as immediately your durable power of attorney. Consequently, you have to make a decision which way you want to go with that.
And those terms are very confusing. In a workshop that we recently did, we had a lady that had seen an attorney, gotten a durable power of attorney in place, and was under the impression that she said, oh, but mine's immediate. And she thought that meant that it immediately went into effect upon her death.
Which is not what a durable power of attorney is for, not for death, but it's for an appointment while you're alive. And the question is it an immediate DPOA where it's not just in effect, but the person can act now? They can act for me from the time I sign it forward? Or does it only go into effect at the time of my incapacity and during my incapacity? Because that's usually where durable powers of attorney become important, is when I can't operate. But
right.
We do have powers of attorney that act when I'm still alive and even capable. I have elderly people who no longer want to sign that check for the power bill. Let my daughter do it. Let my son do it. So they'll have an immediate durable power of attorney in effect, which will continue even if they become incapacitated, but simply because they no longer want to do those things and be saddled with those complications. So.
Well, and now can the durable power of attorney, I mean, does that mean that if you give your durable power of attorney to your son, can you still act on your own, or must the son do those things for you?
It's an agency appointment where the individual that you appoint can act for you, but you can still act. You do not give up your right to act. If, however, you're incapacitated, then you can't act. And that's the durable power of attorney beauty, is that it can handle your affairs even while you're incapacitated. But so long as you're capable, you can act for yourself. Even if you've given an immediate durable power of attorney, it's just another person can act for you, and so long as that you allow them. Now, if you don't like that and change your mind, you can always terminate that or change it to just a springing durable power of attorney.
And springing, it springs into effect upon the event?
Upon the incapacity.
Okay.
Well. And the incapacity is usually your regular physician or two other licensed physicians in the state of Oklahoma. It's usually the triggering clause. So you do have that, and certainly it's something that you should have because it avoids the guardianship issue.
Does the court still have to approve that the primary person is incapacitated? Or, you know, you hear about kids, there's three kids and two of them decide, well, mom lost her marbles, she can't do anything anymore, we're going to have her deemed incapacitated, and we're going to take over the financial affairs of that she deals with. So if, say, they go and get two doctors to deem mom incapacitated, does the court have to approve that, or is it just the doctors?
Once the doctors certify that, then if it's a durable power of attorney that's springing, for example, that goes into effect. Now, if the principal disagrees with that, she can certainly contest that. In fact, that can involve a court action in and of itself. Or she might change the durable power of attorney. She might go see her attorney and say, hey, these guys are trying to take over. I don't want that. And the attorney would even have her probably looked at by another physician to make sure what's going on, to make sure there's not some kind of elder abuse or financial abuse going on. Usually talk with a regular physician or even seek out some assistance, look at the others and say why, look at the medical records and find out why did you certify her as incapacitated. Because medical doctors are not just going to willy-nilly certify somebody's incapacitated. They're going to want some kind of substantiation, some kind of proof. They're going to see the individual. They might run them through some different tests to determine incapacity and come up with a medical opinion. But yet that's still contestable in court if you need to. Now, without a durable power of attorney, you do it through a guardianship, and you file for guardianship. The court will appoint an attorney for the person who's alleged to be incapacitated. That attorney will, usually it's a public defender, and that attorney will get medical assistance to find out, to meet with the individual and make the kind of determination.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot to this. We're going to continue, and I'm going to tell you a scary story about a real estate transaction I had where stepchildren tried to put the wicked stepmother into a nursing home and take over the family trust funds, which were sizable. When we return with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Okay, we're back with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We are talking to attorney Ron Shalott, and I promised you a scary story. I recently sold a home that was referred to me by an out-of-state real estate friend whose mother needed to sell a home. And the fear was that the stepchildren, her stepchildren, was that they said they were going to put her into a nursing home. And Ron, this would be like someone telling me that they were going to put me in a nursing home. She was fully capable physically. I spent a lot of time with this lady. I probably was there 3 hours the first time I was with her and several hours the next time I was with her. There was no signs of any memory loss, any incapacity of any kind. And I know that sometimes people kind of go in and out, but there was no indication by the way she lived and the way she was organized. But there was a trust, a family trust that had money in it. And the stepchildren wanted that money. Their dad was in assisted living. And they went and told the doctors at the assisted living that they were going, that Lori had to go to a nursing home and Fred was going to have to go into memory care. And they, thank goodness for the assisted living personnel who told Loretta that she didn't have to, that gave her a heads up. So can people just have you put into a nursing home?
Not unwillingly, not if you're competent and capable. You certainly have the right enough.
Do you have to prove yourself competent and capable if someone challenges that?
They have to prove that you're incompetent or incapable, actually. So you know, the proof is on the person who's alleging the incapacity, not upon the individual who is around, because you're deemed capable. You're always deemed competent. So the proof of the incapacity has to be with the individual or individuals who are alleging it. But it shows that you need, when you set these matters up, whether it's a trust or durable power of attorney, you need to choose your people carefully as to who's going to be involved. And with blended families, it gets to be very difficult at times. And I've been in litigation situations with stepchildren. They battle one another over the situation where one of the parents has died and the other one's still alive, and it can be a mess. So you have to plan for that ahead of time, utilizing, if you had a family trust there, maybe you need multiple trusts to guard and protect both sides of the family, but you certainly want to choose the trustees and the successor trustees very carefully.
Do you know, sometimes trusts are named, the title to a property, I dealt with one recently that was named in the name of Mrs. So-and-so Trust, her name, and then, and the, her trust plus another trust.
Right. That can happen where you have two trusts be joint owners of a property.
Well, this one was such that it seemed to read that one trust owned half the property and the two joint trusts together owned the other half of the property. That's what it looked like.
That's possible. You can set up trusts in different ways. There you would have then a situation that there would be deemed tenants in common, which is an undivided interest, and whether it's half or a third or a fourth, however it's divided up, it doesn't have to be equal, but you certainly have to look at the deed and see how it's held and what kind of interest that each has.
Well, how do you find out how your property's held? Because people have come to me with a tenants in common deed, and one party has passed, and they think they can, the other party, the survivor, thinks they can just sell the property.
You have to look at the deed that transferred the property to you and see how it reads. If it says joint tenancy with rights of survivorship, that establishes that there is a clause where when one of the joint tenants passes away, the survivors then take that share. Or if it's just two people, then the survivor takes the joint tenancy share. There is some discussion going on, matter of fact, in our estate planning, probate, and trust committee about whether a trust or even an LLC can be a joint tenant with right of survivorship, which is kind of an interesting thought. And the consensus, although there's no particular case law, but the consensus seems to be that no, an entity can't be a joint tenant with right of survivorship because the entity can't terminate. The entity can't itself die. Consequently, right of survivorship shouldn't apply in that particular situation. There's some statutory language that leads to that conclusion, but it's still an issue that hasn't been totally decided. Yet you want to look and see how the property is titled, if it says with right of survivorship. If it doesn't say with right of survivorship, that could, and I stress the word could, mean that you have just a tenancy in common situation where when you die, then your share of it goes to your heirs, you know, wherever, whoever that is, whether it's through a will or through intestacy. There is some law that if you've got a husband and wife, you can have a survivorship situation there, but that still needs to be adjudicated. So consequently, you still have a situation where it's not an automatic.
You might need a good attorney, a good, reasonable attorney that's not looking to be adversarial, but looking to answer your questions and keep you out of the courts. That would be my attorney, Ron Shalott. I'm going to give you his number. It is, Ron, help, 528-2890. 528-2890. Ron, I want you to come back again soon. I miss having you on.
Love to do it.
Okay, Ron Shalott, my attorney. Give me a call this week if you need me. Give Ron a call if you need him. Go to BeckyIvins.com. Look at Becky's favorites. We'll see you back next week with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK.